Hello and welcome to this ACE OncoCast. This podcast series is entitled Expert Review on Innovative Strategies in Locally Advanced Head and Neck Cancer. My name is Rob Coleman and I'm a medical oncologist at the University of Sheffield, United Kingdom. I'm delighted to be joined today by three leading head and neck cancer experts, Dr. Ezra Cohen, a medical oncologist from the University of California, San Diego, and two radiotherapists, Dr. Jonathan Schoenfeld from Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston, and Dr. Jungen Tao from Gustave Roussy, Villejuif, France. Welcome to all of you, and thank you for joining me today. In today's ACE OncoCast, our clinical experts will be discussing the current standard of care for patients with locally advanced head and neck cancer and the challenges presented by the frequent development of resistance to chemoradiotherapy. Welcome, gentlemen, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
So to get us started, let's define the current standard of care for locally advanced squamous head and neck cancers. John, what proportion of your patients present with locally advanced disease? And please highlight your usual treatment approach for these patients.
Thank you. Yeah. So first, thanks again for the invitation to participate in this panel. The majority of patients we see with squamous cell head and neck cancer have locally advanced disease, easily more than half of the patients we see, and maybe as much as about three quarters. And I think this is pretty representative of this population of patients. And it is a challenging group of patients to treat. They're complex because of the importance of the head and neck to speaking, swallowing, and breathing. So, you know, first and foremost, all of our locally advanced head and neck cancer patients are evaluated in our multidisciplinary clinic. These patients will typically see a surgical oncologist, a medical oncologist, along with a radiation oncologist when they come in for their initial evaluation, and we'll all examine the patient at the same time. Sometimes, actually, even when we need more information, these patients will come back for a second multidisciplinary clinic, and that'll give us additional time to review the patients in our multidisciplinary head and neck tumor board, along with other specialties such as dedicated head and neck pathology, as well as neuroradiology. And this will also allow us to bring in other specialties that are important to the care of these patients, such as speech language pathology, nutrition, oral medicine, palliative care, social work, and others. Really, when we think about treatment paradigms for these patients, you know, one of the first things we consider are, you know, are the tumors that these locally advanced patients have, are they resectable? And also, what would be the functional consequences of any potential surgery? Some of these locally advanced patients have, you know, frankly, unresectable T4 disease. And some patients are not surgical candidates, you know, for a variety of reasons, such as medical comorbidities. And in other patients, you know, the disease will be technically resectable, but the functional consequences are thought to be too high, especially when there's a viable non-surgical alternative. For example, you know, a locally advanced larynx cancer patient where an organ sparing definitive non-surgical approach might be the best. After we kind of take all these factors into consideration for patients who are potential surgical candidates, based on all the factors that I just mentioned, you know, we'll consider these patients for upfront surgery or a non-surgical approach such as chemoradiation therapy or radiation therapy. And for patients where surgery is not recommended for one of these reasons, you know, our typical standard is concurrent chemoradiation with three cycles of high dose cisplatin at 100 milligrams per meter squared, or weekly cisplatin. Cisplatin, and particularly bolus cisplatin given at 100 milligrams per meter squared, has been the gold standard for these patients for many, many years. In terms of the radiation treatment for these patients, our typical standard is to give a dose of 70 gray delivered over 35 fractions Monday through Friday over a period of 7 weeks. Again, with concurrent cisplatin chemotherapy in most patients who are candidates. And the addition of cisplatin to radiation, according to multiple randomized studies, is summarized in an updated mock NC meta-analysis, provides a 5-year overall survival benefit of 6.5% and a 10-year survival benefit of 3.6%. So that's our typical standard. You know, there are some patients where instead of upfront chemo radiation, we do consider for upfront induction chemotherapy. Those are patients who progress, who present with more rapidly progressive disease or symptomatic disease, where we have concerns about the need for a rapid response and getting these patients onto treatment quickly. For example, patients who aren't able to tolerate lying flat for chemo radiation therapy. And some of these patients will consider starting with induction chemotherapy before proceeding to definitive chemo radiation.
Thank you. And are there any disease-related or biologic factors that influence your treatment recommendations?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a great question. I think for our head and neck locally advanced patients, the big biologic factor that affects our thinking about this disease is for patients with oropharynx cancers, whether or not their disease is related to the human papillomavirus or HPV. This is really a different biologic entity compared to other locally advanced head and neck cancer patients with squamous cell carcinomas that are related to cigarette, tobacco exposure, or alcohol exposure. These patients with HPV-associated oropharyngeal cancers have cancers that tend to be more responsive to treatment. So, you know, chemotherapy, radiation, these cancers respond better and outcomes are better. And the patient populations are different. So as opposed to some of the patients with diseases, head and neck cancers that are related to tobacco and alcohol use, patients with HPV-associated disease tend to be younger, have fewer medical comorbidities. And so when we think about these patients, you know, in addition to giving patients the best chance of a curative treatment, we're also very much thinking about functional outcomes and toxicity, you know, for the long term, and that these patients will hopefully be doing very well years and even decades after their treatment. You know, for these HPV-associated cancer patients, we try to enroll these patients in de-intensification trials when possible to try to maximize their chance of cure, but also minimize the chance of developing long-term side effects. You know, there are some data that have come out in regards to what strategies might be more or less promising to try to de-intensify these treatments. So for example, the RTOG-1016 trial and de-escalate trials both looked at trying to substitute cetuximab in place of cisplatin for these HPV-associated patients. And unfortunately, that showed demonstrated worse outcomes with cetuximab compared to cisplatin. So we still try to give these locally advanced HPV-associated patients cisplatin chemotherapy alongside definitive chemo radiation. But there are a number of other de-intensification strategies that we are exploring. So for example, reduced intensity radiation or chemo radiation following surgical approaches. Favorable early results were presented in the ECOG 3311 study, as well as institutional studies from Mayo Clinic, the DART study, about potentially using lower doses of radiation following surgery in some of these HPV-associated patients. And then there are other kind of smaller institutional studies that are starting to look at using lower doses of radiation for these HPV-associated patients. So these are all studies, you know, these are all strategies that we're seeking to employ in our HPV-associated population. And, you know, an attempt to minimize the toxicity of treatment and maximize these cure rates.
Thanks. And Ezra, we know that high-dose cisplatin-based chemotherapy, chemoradiotherapy is associated with significant toxicities. And, you know, some patients are really not suitable for cisplatin. Can you summarize briefly the supportive care required that you use to help patients through treatment and what the alternative options are for those patients who can't be treated safely with high-dose cisplatin?
Certainly. And John touched upon the importance of the multidisciplinary team. A lot of that team, at least initially, focuses on exactly what you just said, that is the supportive care to get somebody through this relatively aggressive treatment regimen of chemotherapy and radiation. Let's remember and step back for a moment and think that although we put patients through a lot, it would be the treatment regimen is usually about 2 months, recovery added another 2 months. We're doing that with curative intent. And so that's the payoff, and that's what I tell patients is we're going to the next few months are going to be really difficult, probably the most difficult in your life. What we want to do is be sitting across from each other in about 6 months with no cancer and you're swallowing and speaking normally. So the intensity is worth it because we are aiming for a cure. Of course, how do we do that? Who do we involve? Nutrition becomes incredibly important. For some of the patients, we will require a G-tube or a feeding tube in order to supply that nutrition, but we try to avoid that as much as possible. We do have the luxury at my institution that we can put in a G-tube really within 48 hours. So we can do that expectantly if it's necessary. Other institutions do not have that luxury. And in some practices, a prophylactic G-tube is inserted. I think that really depends on the facilities that you have available to you. But nutrition is paramount, and we get our nutritionists involved really before the start of therapy. And then John mentioned a speech and language pathologist because we want to return these patients to normal swallowing function. And again, we get those individuals involved before the start of therapy and follow the patient, not so much intensely during treatment, but certainly after treatment and in an effort to try and resume their swallowing function. And then, of course, social workers are often involved in these patients because of the socioeconomic status that might be associated with head and neck cancer, at least in some patients. We involve our pharmacists, our nurses, and all the allied health professionals that are necessary to support the patient through treatment. You also asked about alternatives to cisplatin, and that depends a little bit on the patient, but I would say for the most part, what we use in our practice is cetuximab if cisplatin is, for whatever reason, contraindicated. There are phase 3 data, of course, to support cetuximab and radiation being more effective than radiation therapy alone. John mentioned two more recent randomized studies that clearly demonstrated cetuximab radiation to be inferior to cisplatin radiation in an HPV-positive population. And so if cisplatin is appropriate, cisplatin should be used. But when it is not, we usually go to cetuximab radiation. Sometimes, and especially in an older population, it may be appropriate to use radiation therapy alone. And the meta-analysis actually demonstrated that radiation therapy may be an appropriate standard for older patients, that is, patients older than 70. So there is a little bit of a choice. There certainly should be individualization for the patient that you're dealing with.
Thank you for that. And Jungen, we know that despite treatment, around one half of patients with locally advanced squamous cell head and neck cancer do develop local or distant disease recurrence within about 2 years. And the 5-year survival rate, I understand, is only probably less than 60%, and even lower in patients with HPV negative disease. So can you comment on the key reasons for chemotherapy failure and resistance, and briefly mention some of the strategies designed to try and improve on current results?
Thank you, Rob. Yeah, chemotherapy resistance remains a major cause of poor survival in head and neck cancer. The potential causes for chemotherapy resistance could be at first heavy smokers, HPV negative disease, and those patients have quite a worse prognosis. The dose limitation of radiotherapy in adjacent normal tissue and therefore inadequate radiation dose volume coverage, or even inadequate chemotherapy dose or cycles. And there are also other causes, including EGFR overexpression, hypoxia in tumors, immune escape of cancer cells, mutation of certain gene, such as P53, P10, rest, etc. And also there are other causes, such as dysfunction of DNA, damage repair pathway, cell cycle pathway, mitosis pathway, etc. How to improve chemoradiotherapy? The first strategy could be intensifying radiotherapy. It's possible to modify dose fractionation. We could use accelerated or hard fractionation chemoradiotherapy as used in phase 3 trial, GOTEC-99-02 trial, or RTOG-0129 phase 3 trial. However, the accelerated chemoradiotherapy did not show better progression-free survival or overall survival versus conventional chemoradiotherapy. Another way could be use technological technical development for a good dose delivery, such as MRT, IGRT, as used in the phase 3 trial, GOTEC-2004-01 trial. We increased the radiation dose from 70 gray with 3D formal radiotherapy to 75 gray with MRT. However, we did not find local regional control benefit with this increase of 5 gray. We could also use proton therapy, and this is still to be evaluated in head and cancer. We could also intensify chemotherapy by using induction chemotherapy. Unfortunately, in DECIDE paradigm or GOTEC-2007-02 phase 3 trials, the induction chemotherapy with TPF schedule before chemoradiotherapy did not show better progression-free survival or overall survival versus chemoradiotherapy alone. We could also add EGFR targeted therapy such as cetuximab to chemoradiotherapy as used in GOTEC-2001 trial. This strategy, cetuximab, carboplatin 5-FU and radiotherapy could be better than cetuximab radiotherapy alone. However, quite disappointing comparing with cisplatin and radiotherapy in several randomized trials, such as the RTOG-0522 trial. And the further combination could be immune checkpoint inhibitors that will be discussed right now.
Well, thank you, Ezra, Jonathan, and Jungen for this great discussion. And thank you all for listening. Stay tuned for next week's podcast as we discuss whether there is a role for immunotherapy in the management of locally advanced head and neck cancer.